Hey everybody, it is Tom Dotan from The Information coming at you with another bonus episode taken from the event that we had in Los Angeles recently about the future of storytelling. So last week we played the episode where Jessica interviewed Jared Groost of Snap about that company's content strategy. This week it is Jessica's interview with Jason Blum. Jason is the CEO of Blumhouse, which is a pretty well-known independent production company. Do a lot of horror films like Get Out, Black Klansman, and they've also struck deals with streaming companies like Netflix and Amazon. Don't have an Apple deal, as Jason mentioned, and of course they talked about Quibi. Who doesn't have a Quibi deal these days? A very interesting conversation. Jason is an opinionated guy with a lot of thoughts about the future of his industry, so this was an enjoyable one. Before I get to the interview, though, I want to, of course, mention that the event in Los Angeles was co-sponsored with Airtable. And if you want to get $200 worth of Airtable credits, go to airtable.com/theinformation and claim your prize. All right, let's get to Jessica's talk with Jason Blum.
Joining us, sir.
Thank you for having me. What have you learned today?
Oh, so much. We've approached.
What's happening in our future?
Well, you're going to tell us that in a second.
God,
but
I
even though everyone here knows you, I am going to introduce you as Jason Blum, the founder of Blumhouse Productions and CEO. Invented the budget horror blockbuster. You didn't invent
low budget.
Low budget.
I totally take credit for inventing a low budget.
You totally created it. Which, with that, I'm going to just jump right in because we are not in a low budget moment in Hollywood
right now. Aren't. It's true.
And you know, I got to say, someone alerted me to a tweet you sent saying that you really enjoyed The Morning Show. And I got to say,
I think
of The Morning Show,
it's a guilty pleasure.
I think of the inverse of Jason Blum.
I know.
Because you make horror movies for, what, $5 million?
Yes.
Okay. I think that is like a second of Jennifer Aniston on screen in The Morning Show or something like that.
That shows like $5 million a minute.
I almost did the math, and then I ran out of time.
Yeah.
But so, like, actually, this isn't a bad place to start. Like, what – I mean, defend The Morning Show if you'd like. But when you see the – you're in television, and we'll get into that too. But I mean, what is going on in this moment? Are we at a crazy point in spending? And
well, you have to separate movies and TV. The theatrical movie business is super challenged right now and very budget focused. And low budgets for a studio are extremely attractive. The opposite is true in television. They don't care. They just want the show to make noise. They don't care how much it costs. And there's no metric. There's no this many people are paying this much, so we have to spend this much less on programming, and we're profitable. That doesn't exist in TV. It does exist in the theatrical movie business.
Surely you can do, I mean, at some point, Netflix, Apple, Showtime, I mean, people can do math to justify.
But it hasn't arrived. But it's a gold rush right now, and probably for the next 3 to 5 years.
3 to 5 years.
Maybe not quite that long. 2 to 4 years. It's going to continue to be a gold rush, and that there's not going to be business economics applied to streaming anything.
Why?
Which is great for producers. Because it's a land grab. They're saying we're going to spend as much money as possible to get, because you want to get a subscriber early. And the idea is that once you have them and lock them in for a while, they're going to stay, which I think is also probably not accurate. But that's the thinking, is that you want to get as many as you can as early on. Everyone's trying to catch Netflix. They beat everybody. Mm-hmm. So they're trying to do that with fancy, expensive shows, regardless of how much those shows cost. But in movies, they're not. The movie business is super hard, super difficult, and economically studios are struggling, so they very much like low budgets. And our television business is
not low budget.
It's totally the opposite of exactly. And the funny thing is, we 3 years ago, if you Google, there's a huge Wall Street Journal article. It's like Blumhouse gets into low budget television. It was a total failure. We wanted to
the
do
journal
a show,
or
the
no
the, no the no
one
the,
got what, that
the journal was yeah exactly. Well, the journal failed too because we never did the budget television. But no one was interested in that. No one wanted a show. We were like, we're going to give you 10 episodes for $5 million, you know, like our movie. But it was not, no one was like,
and
I don't
we got
really
Roger
care
Ailes,
about that.
I which I
that,
really but, liked.
Yeah, which was 10 episodes for a lot more than $5 million.
Was that a huge success for you? I mean, when you tell us a bit about that project, I mean, I'm sure people saw it, but like, is there more to come? Is that the future of Blumhouse Television?
Yeah, I mean, that was a follow, you know, we did Sharp Objects, and we kind of looking for premium series, and then we did Loudest Voice. Right now we're doing we just finished shooting this show for Showtime called The Good Lord Bird that stars Ethan Hawke as John Brown. So we're doing a lot of high-end limited series. Was that a success for us? Yeah, it was definitely a success for us. I wish it was better reviewed. You know, it was like people, and we got all these reviews after they had seen the 7 episodes of like, oh, you know, we actually didn't get this. And I think looking back on it, it could have been better. I'm not putting this on Showtime because they were a great partner for us and a great marketing partner. I loved the marketing that they did. I think in looking back, if we had marketed it more as a story about Fox News as opposed to a bio thing of Roger Ailes, that might have made a difference. But, and it was too late. Once the critics were like, hey, wait, we liked it more than we thought, it was too late because there's 10 more shows that have come out since that time.
Yep.
So that was frustrating. But overall, I'm really proud of it. I'm really glad we did it. And it was a good experience. And we're doing more in that space.
I want to go back to the Gold Rush for a second. So how much is money from my neck of the woods out in Silicon Valley driving that versus, so that's Apple, Amazon, yeah, where you have a TV and exclusive Netflix deal?
No, we just have this, we sold them an 8 movie series, but that's all.
Got it. I mean, is that, so like, my personal belief is that this is still experimental for the tech companies. I'm not sure that Apple, why are you laughing?
I think that's funny because I think money is so crazy that what's experimental for the tech company has like run a tidal wave into Hollywood.
But you can pull that tidal wave back.
I don't foresee that happening. No, I mean from my side of things, the tech business has almost taken over Hollywood. I mean those three places are spending more than anyone else. Not in movies, mm-hmm. not in movies, but movies is starting. But in television and streaming, that's all anyone. That, I mean, just completely taken over. I mean, they've eaten the lunch of the, you know, traditional media companies in a huge way, for better or for worse.
Is Disney going to fight back?
No. Oh, yes. Yes. I mean, with the exception of Disney, I would say. Okay. I mean, Disney is the one strong foe. And of course,
it's probably the one you don't do deals with. No horror on Disney
and
Plus.
Way too expensive. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But everyone else is you know, struggling to figure it out. Haven't figured it out. We'll see what happens. I believe it's going to get me in trouble, but whatever. I think traditional media companies are much better producers. In other words, the amount of shows they have to make to get shows that people pay attention to, the amount of movies that they have to make to movies pay attention to, the ratio is much lower with traditional media companies. Tech companies have spent an enormous more money, made a lot more shows to get the hits that they've gotten, but that could even out the longer they're in the business, you know?
If that's related to talent, can't tech companies buy the talent?
It's not just related to talent. I think that's a big mistake that tech makes. We're gonna pay all this money for all this talent and let them do whatever they want. That does not get good shows. Mm-hmm. That does not get good. The what makes good movies and good shows is the balance between the financier putting certain parameters around the creative person. And when you just say, we're just gonna open our checkbook and let the creative person do whatever they want, it creates interesting content, but not commercial content. Mm.
Do you think that the tech companies have the right people leading their strategies on the film and television side?
My God, that's who pays my bills. They're all brilliant. Are you kidding? Every one of them.
Do you think they're all going to be in their jobs 12 months from now?
That's not true of anyone in any of those jobs in media companies ever.
Dramatic.
Well, no, it's true. That's not, those jobs don't last. Now, I'll tell you something interesting about that. Those jobs don't last because they last much more in TV than in movies. In the movie business in particular, like the big jobs, they don't really last. And that's because the business is so difficult. But when you have a different metric defining success, if success isn't defined in a different way, the people may last in those jobs much longer.
Because there's no, that's a good point. So when is
I didn't say no, I just said different.
I understand. Is Silicon Valley going to eat the movie business? I mean, it sounded like you left I've heard you say before, you know, Netflix eventually will be a big player in movies. They just have to kind of like get their slate going.
I don't know. It's a good question. I mean, they're going to forever change it. And they'll be, you know, they've really massively reduced the power and impact the Hollywood studios have had on the culture in a huge way. I don't think they're going to eliminate it, but I think they will fundamentally change the movie and TV business in ways that will last forever.
Okay, that's bold. It's fun to like see the perspective from people. That's why we come out here, folks. So when you're thinking about your partners, you've obviously got Universal. We mentioned Amazon.
Showtime.
I mean, what? There's this debate between, you know, total exclusives, spreading lots of bets. There are more potential partners than ever. You have a Quibi deal too?
Of course, we have a Quibi deal.
Okay.
Come on, you're not working in Hollywood. I mean, you gotta have a Quibi deal.
Okay. Well,
I mean,
tell us about the Quibi deal. I'm dying.
Oh my! Really? Of all my deals?
Well, we're gonna go through all of them. We've got time.
We don't have the time to do that.
Okay. We're gonna pick the top three.
Let's. Quibi. I can't even look. There are two people here. We talk about Quibi a lot. We're always plowing through data on Quibi. I'll tell you a story about Quibi.
Loves Quibi stories.
Okay, so I'm in my staff meeting this morning, and we're talking. We have like two or three Quibi things. We have this really, really great scary movie actually, which I tried to make as a movie and it didn't happen for a variety of reasons. But we're doing it on Quibi. It's called Wolves and Villagers, and I was saying, and in the beginning of Quibi, you know, everyone was very skeptical, and God bless Jeffrey, who can sell like crazy, and he, you know, he's like, I'm sure most people in the room have done the flip, turned the phone. We were
he
talking about turning
with
phones.
Me and the history of the pager. I don't know, did anyone get this spiel? He was like, the pager
network
reinvented, and I was like, we're gonna have to move this along.
But it's a good, I mean, it's a good pitch. Yeah. Anyway, we were talking in our staff meeting this morning, and I just felt like suddenly, you know, everyone was like, yeah, I mean, you know, people like there was like
a
little positive momentum.
Didn't do so well. I mean,
go 90, go 90. You couldn't do this. You couldn't do this. You couldn't do this.
But okay.
So I think it's cool that he's trying something new and we're trying things with him
so how much money are you doing for it? Relative, but
it's a cost plus deal. It's not a secret. His deal. Oh, no, it's not really. It's a cost plus deal, but it's a very short license. And his pitch is he just takes a very short license, and then you get to own the rights, which is a big deal, which very few people are doing.
Would you stitch it together and try and release it?
Sell it as a movie? Yeah, I mean, sure, we might. I mean, I'll sell it however we can sell it. I don't know how we're gonna sell it after we get it back. But sure, we could put it back together as a movie. Sure.
Okay, so of course you have a Quibi deal. Amazon, how's that going?
We're shooting our, we're on our third movie. We did this really cool, we did this series of movies for Hulu called Into the Dark. We're actually on our 20th movie for Hulu. We've been shooting over 1,000 days in a row, which is amazing, God. All in LA. We make a movie, a scary movie for every holiday. So
you are doing Disney. I can't even rule them out anymore.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's right. That part of Disney. Scary Thanksgiving, scary Christmas, scary Father's Day, scary Mother's Day. And it's this kind of neat thing. It's like a real hybrid of movie making and episodic television, and that they're standalone 80-minute movies with different directors, but the crew is the same. So there's the same DP, the same group of editors. So it's kind of like the director has to step into the experience as if it's episodic television, but they're directing, but we're starting a new movie every 3 or 4 weeks. And we've been doing it for 18 months, and it's been going well. And so I was talking to Jen, and she said, you know, could you do that on a larger scale, fewer movies, more expensive movies, with a theme of betrayal? So we're doing 8 standalone streaming movies, all themed they all have the theme of betrayal, and we're shooting our third one, and I guess they'll start airing them next year.
And same approach from like a budget perspective. I mean, are those?
Those are, all under $10 million. Yeah.
Cool. And you mentioned off the bat that you don't seem too rosy about film and theatrical, but what does the next 12 months look like from that point of view? And
I wouldn't say it's challenged. Is that what you mean? Not rosy? Yeah. Well, it's definitely challenged. I think that, and I'm not saying this to self-promote, I think it's not great for the business, but I think the movie business is kind of very limited. It's like low budget horror movies work and event movies work, mostly event, and almost everything else, as we've all been saying was going to happen, it's like happening almost everything else. I mean, there was the Ferrari movie worked, which I was really happy about. At least there's not, there's a little audience left for movies that don't fall into the categories I just mentioned. But I think generally, the theatrical audience is kind of moving into those really, low budget, scary, big tempo movies and not a lot else.
So do you think,
And the reason for that is because this really interesting thing happened, which is that the studios try an exhibition 5 years ago tried to get along. This is no secret, but I always think it's funny that no one's talking about it this way. So they tried to make some kind of a deal to not give in to windows, to reduce the windows, to bring it, for take them down to 3 weeks or 2 weeks or whatever it is. And what happened is they couldn't reach an agreement. Exhibition dug in, the studios dug in, whatever, whoever's fault it was, it didn't work. And as a result, the windows totally collapsed by third parties. So Netflix has no windows on TV, no windows on their movies. Like, windows don't exist anymore for tons of movies. It's just their movies aren't being made by studios, they're being made by streamers, and they're being put on streaming because the audience demands to see a movie when it comes out. And Hollywood kind of wouldn't listen to that. And as a result, they seceded more of the business to the streamers because the streamers aren't adhering to windows.
Well, there's an obvious fix for that, which is that Hollywood could just further collapse theatrical.
Yeah, but it's already, like, once you're watching a $200 million Michael Bay movie or a $150 million Scorsese movie at home, you've already established, it's too late in a way. I mean, it'll happen. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's going to happen, but in a way, like, If they reduce windows now theatrically, I don't think you're suddenly getting the $50 million theatrical drama back in the theater. Whereas if they had done it 5 years ago, they might have saved that movie. Hmm. That's what I mean. Because the audience is now conditioned to say, like, wait, why should I buy a $15 ticket for $10 a month? I get massive movies in my house.
Yeah.
So that's interesting.
It is. Is anyone going to catch Netflix? I mean, I don't know what that actually means. I mean, but is your view of the world that there are a couple of winners in streaming?
Yes, my view is that there's not going to, I don't think more than a couple, but I think there are four or five big streamers. And I don't, I always think about that. Like, can you catch them? I don't
What
I don't
do you
have
make of Disney's 10 million plus?
Well, what is it now? They don't tell you, right?
I think they just said, I think they announced an opening, first 24 hours,
yeah,
they had 10 months.
But we don't know now, right? They don't know. They don't say after
And
that,
we also
right?
don't, I mean, there are partnerships in there, there are free trials there. I mean, I thought it was impressive.
I thought it was amazing, but well, now it could be 25 million, right?
Yeah.
We have no idea. No, I thought it was amazing, but I'm not surprised. I mean, they have amazing, amazing, so who wouldn't order it eventually? So it's not surprising to me. And they have an impressive, a super impressive array of content on the service.
Yeah.
And they did the same thing, right? They can't make a deal with theaters. They have Lady and the Tramp is like a $60 million movie, and Tom McCarthy's movie, which comes out like I think in March or April, is like a $50 million movie. Those are straight to streaming. So they're with exhibition, they're really, the exhibition saying no, 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 and they're saying, well, okay, we won't, now we're just going to make movies and put them straight on TV and not put them in the theaters at all. That's what the Disney's doing, the same thing now.
Yeah.
They're making super expensive movies exclusively for their streaming service.
Yep. And playing a different economic game, right?
To your yes, point. Yes, yes, exactly.
What do you make of Facebook these days? Do you have a watch deal, Facebook watch deal?
We do have a Facebook watch deal. Thanks to Ricky Van Veen sitting here. Yeah, go Ricky.
I know it's the top of your list every day, but I mean,
what do I make of Facebook in what way? That's a very loaded question.
I really want everything going through your head when I ask that question.
The first thing that goes through my head is politics, but I don't, you know, I'm not, and we have an endless debate about this on Slack about politics, but I really don't want to talk
that
about
that.
I don't really want to talk about politics.
Really, okay, but
it's like too exhausting.
Fair enough. But let's talk about actually from the marketing point of view. So in addition to being scrappy budget guy, you're known, I think you were very early on using digital to market your films, and what's that landscape like now? I mean, in what's working, and maybe that will bring Facebook into the mix, maybe it won't.
Well, this is what I was gonna actually talk about this before. The super frustrating thing, the most frustrating thing I think about being a producer now is the lack of transparency, right? You get, you especially for a company like our company, in how many people are seeing it, since the beginning of time, you got paid based on how many people saw or bought a ticket, your rating, or how many tickets you sold. Yeah. You got paid based on the performance of your thing, right? You don't get paid based on the performance of your thing in so much now, which is, I don't think long-term sustainable. I don't think that model will, I could explain why, but I don't think long-term you can get away with paying producers and artists a flat fee for anything they do, no matter how much business it does. Mm. Not sustainable. One of the things I love about Facebook and our show on Facebook is you can see how many, it's so cool. Like the things, the way.
You're probably not making a ton of money on Facebook.
No, but you can't make money until you have the data. I mean, I wouldn't expect. We're getting. But by the way, it wasn't even our show. They gave it to us to produce. I'm very grateful for the money that we're making. But you don't make money based on performance for a long time. Mm-hmm. You first have to know the performance, right? You first have to say like, look, my thing did this, my thing did that. Now on my next deal, you have to do this.
Yeah.
And if you don't, if you're not transparent about how your thing is performing, you can't do that.
Isn't that an opportunity for disruption, so to speak? I mean, why doesn't someone come in and say?
Well, that's why I think that's my point. So here's what's gonna happen. So soon, right now it's going this way. More and more people, Disney is not sharing. Now more and more people are not sharing. So the trend right now is everyone's following Netflix's model, right? But in 4 years, the next Spielberg or what Jordan Peele is gonna come out with his next thing, and he's gonna say, I'm only doing this if you share. Mm-hmm. And either one of the big companies will break or a new company will come out and say, we're gonna share. And Jordan's gonna say, instead of going to some big company, I'm gonna go to this new startup and I'm gonna get 25% of, or some of the, you know, a percentage of the subscriber revenue, or I'm gonna get a percentage of the profits of this new thing. And I think that's inevitable that will happen, but we've got a lot of this way to go first before that happens.
That would also lead, I mean, one question I have is if this whole zeitgeist or model now is more direct to consumer, and we've cut out some of the middlemen. I mean, are we going to see like cutting out even? I mean, more of them. And obviously you need distributors. But I don't
think you're going to see. I think that is also trending like this. More people are being cut out. But I think it will reverse because I think what tech companies are learning is that you can't apply a formula to making great content. There is no formula. And you can't do it in bulk. You can't just say I talked about this a little bit before, these 20 people are the best at what they do. We're gonna pay more for them than everything else. We're gonna let them go and then we're gonna get the greatest. It just doesn't work like that. And it has to be scaled down. I mean, you look at what 20th Century Fox used to be and all the studios are like this. They had Searchlight, they had
Fox 2000, they have the Big Fox. They have labels.
Oh, thank God. This is so much better. Now, do you need to take this away or it's okay? Just hang it off the back. He's whispering. And I think that one of the,
I have reasons why it's not so interesting why, but I think one of the ways to have a better ratio of good movies and television is making things with smaller units of people. You can't just apply such broad. That's why Disney has 10 studios. They have ABC Studios and Fox 21 and the network and the whatever. They have 8 studios. And Iger didn't say, like, let's put these all together and make one big thing. He's got them all like this because of just what I said. So wait, what was the question that you were asking? Because I had a point I was trying to make now beyond the siloing, small siloing of...
But you can't apply things in
bulk. I said that. But then I can't remember.
Well,
do you remember your question? No.
No, I don't.
It's okay.
But
I bored you so much.
Well,
it's okay.
We were talking about Facebook. I remember that much. But... Oh, right. Well, why doesn't someone come in and go use, you know, metrics the performance? And you said you think it will happen, but it will. I mean, if you were Facebook, what would your Hollywood strategy be?
I mean, I'm really on the fucking, under the spotlight here.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, biggest tech company, one of the biggest shown that, right?
Well, Ricky and I disagree about this.
Oh, excellent.
If I were a tech company.
On the record by association.
I were a tech company, not just Facebook, if I were a tech company, I would, but tech companies don't do this because they think they can do everything better than everybody else. But if I were a tech company, I would buy a studio. That's what I would
do.
There's the answer.
Which one?
I don't know enough about, I don't follow enough. I mean, I don't know. I could never even begin to answer which one, but I think that's.
And why?
You know, I think Apple should buy a studio. I think that they should. I think because it's really hard to what I keep saying. It's really hard to have a good ratio of, I know what I was going to say. I remembered my thing. It's really hard to have a good ratio of movies and TV shows that people connect with. It's really, really hard to do that. And so the tech thing is like, that's crazy. Why would I spend $1 billion, $5 billion on a studio? I should spend that much on content myself. We can do that. Yeah, we could do that. And we're going to wind off much better off. And as time marches on, I think that I'm throwing out my crazy ideas, but I think that if you look back, and again, it's kind of too late now, but 5 years ago, or when tech companies were really getting into it, they would have had a bigger audience for less money had they bought a studio.
Why do you say it's too late?
I don't know. I mean, it depends on the platform. Mm-hmm. It depends on who it is. The studios are worth more money now because streaming has increased the values of the studios in a big way. Tech companies are worth more too. So. 5-6 years ago, they weren't worth as much money. But what I was going to say, which I think is to contradict what I was saying before, and something that people don't talk about. One thing that's really good for the consumer about not paying people on the success of their movies and TV shows is that they've applied like this communism to, or it's not really communism. They're subsidizing the arts in this kind of extraordinary way. So if you make something for a platform and 1,000 people watch it or 10 million people watch it, I'm exaggerating, but to a certain degree, you still make the same money. You get the same upfront money. So what's happened is the people who make super commercial stuff are subsidizing the people who don't make commercial stuff. And the communist in me, or the socialist in me, loves that. Even though I make much more commercial material, there is something kind of great about that. Now, I don't know why they don't talk about that more. I don't know why, but there's something kind of, if I was Netflix, I'd be saying, hey, you know, all these things you guys would never get to see if it weren't for these things. And we're spreading it out a little bit, which I think is really cool.
I think it's worth putting more attention on, in part because these businesses are so metrics focused in everything else they do. I mean, their employees are up and out every whatever based on their metrics, right? So it does really cut, it is an open question, I think. And I mean, but why are they doing? I mean, they are doing it that way because enough of the talent wanted it that way in a certain period of time, and the model got stuck, or they feel like, I mean, they can't possibly feel like it's hurting their business.
No, they did it that way because they don't want to share the data. So if you're not going to share the data, you got to buy out the talent's back end. And the problem with it is that if you have something not so commercial, you sell your back end. Mm-hmm. If you have something super commercial, you don't do it on that deal. And the why we're going like this is we're still living in a world where there are lots of places that you can participate in the success of your movie or TV show. But as that closes down, it's like I said, something new will happen. But right now what happens is if you think you have a hit, you don't sell it to streaming. But if you're not so sure, then you take the money up front.
That was going to be my next question. Doesn't it create a sort of perverse incentive to...
Yeah, it creates a reverse incentive. Yeah, exactly. Right now, yes, it does.
Huh. Interesting. I want to open up for questions in one sec. I do want to go back to Apple and the morning show. Do you have a deal with Apple?
No, I'm very... Is anyone here from Apple? No, I'm very upset with Apple because I can't sell anything to them to save my life. And then they said,
because it's not family friendly?
Yeah, they said they're edgy, but they got all sorts of edgy stuff. They do a M. Night Shyamalan. They have this. They have a ton of edgy. So I'm very agitated about it, okay. And I'm hoping that we sell to Apple very soon. Otherwise, I'm going to be more agitated.
Okay. Well, we'll have that negotiation in public. What's the role for them in the ecosystem? You're going to say just pay a lot of money, right?
I don't mean what's the role for them? They're like dipping their toe. They're just trying a few things. It's like a little rounding error. Like, let's see what these guys make.
So why are you tweeting about them?
Because I really...
Because you want to get the deal.
No,
now
that's
I understand.
Not true. No, you know why? Because I so wanted to not like the show. The truth is, I was expecting not to like it. And then I just... And that one of my favorite, maybe my favorite things of all... This is going to be kind of amusing because I never said this before. One of my favorite things about movies and TV shows, my personal relationship to them, is that my visceral response to what I'm seeing will always supersede my little petty things in my head. So, like... I'm watching the show. I didn't think the first episode was very good. And then, I've watched all five now, and it gets better and better. And now I'm like so into it.
Has anyone else watched all five? Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Hello. How are you? So I like it more and more and more. And now, I think Billy Crudup is amazing in the show. He's great. He's that character.
Yeah.
So probably most people won't know, but I kind of had this public feud with Noah Baumbach. And not public in any way, except I was public about it. He was much more not public. He was much more, I don't think he gives a shit what I think. And he's much more like evolved than I am. So it went on for a long, it's still going on in my head, right? And so Ricky and I really dislike it. Like, I really have a really strong negative feeling. Okay. And Ricky and I've heard so many good things about his movie, right? So I'm like, and I haven't seen one of his movies in a while because everyone's like, but this movie, everyone is like, it's really good, right? So I'm like, fuck, I'm just going to go see this movie. So Ricky and I saw the movie like 2 weeks ago. And I loved the movie. And I'm about to send, I haven't talked to him in 20 years. I asked my friend today for his email. I'm going to send him an email. I'm going to say, congratulations on your movie. And I love that about, movies and TV. You know, I think it's so cool that, and that's why it's different. To me, for a lot of reasons, but it's kind of different than any other business. And it is such an emotional business. I'm clearly very emotional. And I love that about it. Very. No, it's not big of me.
No, but that a lot of people here, I probably feel the same way. Okay, we probably have time for a couple questions. I'm sure there are many.
Hi. Oh, hello. Natalie Jarvie with The Hollywood Reporter.
Hello. Oh, God. Are you allowed to report all this?
I guess. I mean, we're reporting it, okay. So...
I'm not going to ask you about film or TV. I want to ask you about your podcasting deal that you just did. What's that about? Is that for a way to kind of back your way into a film and TV project, or is there something about that medium that's appealing to you?
Well, it's. I love. I mean, I'm really in. I actually.
And tell us about the deal for.
I was really into. I was listening to a lot of podcasts, but now I'm listening to, again, Ricky's like the star of this. Ricky told me you can listen to a book on tape at like the 1.5. I know everyone in here knows that, but I didn't know it. I love books on tape.
Out in Silicon Valley, we have been doing that for some time,
for about 15
years.
2X.
I know, 15
years.
2X
is really amazing. I do that like if I'm not doing anything else, like very focused. I just did Catch and Kill. I'm doing all these books.
Ooh, that's a
podcast. To answer your question, I think that the market is very sensitive at the moment to the source of a story, oftentimes almost more than the story itself. So if we hear a great, it didn't used to be like that. You used to hear a great story, you pitch a writer, and the writer comes up with a movie or a TV show, you say, hey, I read this or whatever, and I read an article, it doesn't really matter. Like, this is the movie or this is the TV show. And the market, I think, is more sensitive to that than ever before. For reasons I could go into, but won't. Very quickly, why I think because I think more than ever before, executives don't trust their gut. They need more, and there's more layers of people to go into, and so you need to say, hey, not only did I like it, but it's a podcast. Mm-hmm. The podcast got a lot of listeners. You got a lead, yeah. And so when we hear. And so as a result, I'm interested in kind of, you know, what you're referring to and saying, if we hear a great story, we can do a podcast of it. But I'm also interested in the format of podcasts. You know, someone was saying to me, probably this is all old news to you guys, you already know, but like, podcasts became popular because of binging. So people suddenly got used to seeing not being able to consume a much longer story in 5 or 6 or 8 hours, like consume in a row. And so that opened up the world to listening to stories much longer. And I'm curious and interested about that too.
Great. I think we have time for one more.
I just want to talk about the economics and what you were just kind of alluding to earlier on, like a theatrical release and the kind of hit nature and the upside and what kind of comes back to the storyteller. So I'm just thinking, like, take a Jordan Peele, Get Out, and the kind of box office that kind of generates, and then just comparing, like, for someone like Jordan and his, like, earnings and what he can kind of get for that, and then where you kind of see the streaming market today, like, how much is that delta on the theatrical?
Well, I could tell a story which I think will illustrate my point. I recently got into a very heated argument with someone who runs an agency, and for the following reason. They went out with a true story about a haunted house. Now, given the fact that houses aren't haunted, when you have a true story of a haunted house, it's a great fucking thing because you can really make a movie out of that, and the movie is pretty much, it's as close of a guarantee as you can have, right? And to my point earlier, this is a good way to kind of end too, because
I do have one more question.
To my point earlier about a profitable thing not selling to a streamer, one thing you never do on the planet ever right now is sell a movie about a haunted house to Netflix, especially if you're an agency. Why? Because to answer your question about Get Out, Get Out throws off $40 million in profit. I'm not saying maybe more, $40 to $50 million in profit. I'm not saying Jordan got that, but Jordan, us, QC, the actors, all the above the line, all of whom an agency represents, there's $50 million, but call it $25 million because that was an outlier. Since let's say instead of making $250 million, it made $100 million or $125 million. So then there's $25 million of third-party participations, conservatively. So as an agency, there's $2.5 million in commissions. You sell a haunted house movie to Netflix, for the movie is $10 million, there's $4 million. That's it. There's $400,000 of commissions. I went crazy over this thing because... That's the answer to your question. I mean, isn't that kind of what you're asking?
Yeah, and then the other piece I'm just thinking about is, like, as you look at your slate and then you look at the theatrical model today, like, what do you believe a film has to be able to generate to warrant, like, you would actually take the bet and go down the theatrical route versus...
What do you mean? How much box office it has to make? I don't know what you're saying.
Yeah, but say that the top line gross and then
we want to think a film's going to make... I mean, the break even on our movies is like 60 worldwide, so we want to think it's going to make 80 pretty safely and have a very good shot at 100.
All right, thanks.
Okay. Worldwide.
So last question. You're, in addition to navigating this crazy new world, obviously building a brand yourself and have done an amazing job at building Blumhouse. I mean, how do you think about building, maintaining the Blumhouse brand across all these different things? Is that even important to you? And you know, many people in this room we're trying to build media companies that kind of stand out in this era. What advice do you
have? It's super important. I mean, the advice I have is you first have to think, are you doing an industry-facing brand or consumer-facing brand? Almost all entertainment production companies are industry-facing, not consumer. Imagine is industry-facing. It's not consumer-facing. We are one of the more consumer-facing brands in Hollywood, for sure, and I think about it with everything we do. I think there are movies that we've done in the past I wouldn't have called Blumhouse now. I would have taken a producer credit, but I wouldn't have called them Blumhouse movies. So we think about it. We think about how we're expanding the brand in TV. We say things that keep us up at night or things that scare us. So Roger Ailes scares me. So The Loudest Voice fits squarely into the brand. But we're not going to be doing. I might produce comedies, but we're not going to produce comedies under Blumhouse. So we think about that, and we use it carefully, and we think about it. We think about it all the time. I think the huge value in our company is. Eventually, you know, we'll have a home on a streamer. I have a pretty good idea which one. That'll be a Blumhouse home, so kids go the Blumhouse environment, so kids will go to that thing. We'll
so
have all
Netflix.
Of our movies. It's Netflix. So I'll have all our movies. We'll go there and our series, and we'll put a new thing there, and we'll have a direct relationship with the consumer. That's my kind of hope. In the kind of medium term future.
So people won't be subscribing to Blumhouse, but they'll have a channel within Netflix.
That's
why do you want to produce comedies? I've heard you say a million times that economics don't work. You need a star
for theatrical, not for streaming. I would never do a theatrical comedy in my life ever. Never.
But for streaming, okay. I am going to stop it there.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, sir.